Oberman showed them the slowly rotating turntable and explained how the spin casting method worked. Halleck took it all in within a few minutes.
"Thank you so much, Mr. Oberman," she said by way of dismissal.
"My first name's Nate, Mrs. Halleck," said Oberman. "I'll be leaving Farside by the end of the month. I could sure use a recommendation from somebody as important as you are. It'd help me land a decent job." Halleck eyed him briefly. "Are you returning to Earth?"
"Yes'm. Cellini's already turned me down. They claim I don't have enough experience for any of the job openings they've got available."
She glanced at McClintock, then said to the young man,
"I'm leaving tomorrow, but call me first thing in the morning. We can talk then."
Oberman's narrow face broke into a triumphant smile.
"I'll phone you at 7 sharp.
Smiling back at him, Halleck said,
"Make it 8. I'll talk to you then."
"Yes, ma'am."
As they returned to the corridor, McClintock said, "That was very kind of you, Anita." She made a vague gesture with one hand.
"I'm not the monster you seem to believe I am, Carter."
"I never thought you were a monster." Halleck cocked an eyebrow at him and changed the subject.
"I'm quite famished."
"I'm afraid the eating facility here is rather primitive. Nothing but a cafeteria."
"I suspected as much," said Halleck. "That's why I brought a couple of frozen dinners in my bag."
"Clever lady," McClintock said.
"Would you care to join me for dinner, Carter?"
In his mind's eye, he saw how delightedly happy his father had been when Anita Halleck had been his rousing, laughing, adventurous mistress. It was more than showing off a trophy, McClintock thought. Father was genuinely mad about her, until she started playing around behind his back. "Now she's coming on to me?" he asked himself. "Could she be that blatant? What does she want from me?" "I have a dinner engagement," he lied. "One of the astronomers. She's new here." Halleck's sensuous lips curved slightly.
"And you volunteered to show her the sights?"
Feeling slightly flustered, he answered, "Nothing like that, Anita. She's just a kid."
"So was I, once."
McClintock realized that the astronomy office was a few doors down the next corridor. Hoping that Trudy was where she should be, he said, "Come on, I'll introduce her to you." Smiling as enigmatically as the Sphinx, Halleck started along the corridor beside McClintock. With a surge of relief, McClintock saw that Trudy actually was in the astronomy office. It was one of the bigger spaces in the Farside complex, with 4 desks placed in the 4 corners of the chamber. Trudy was at the desk in the farthest corner, her eyes fixed on the wall screen to her right. It showed a complex chart of curves and alphanumerics that was incomprehensible to McClintock. Trudy was staring at the screen so hard she didn't notice McClintock and Halleck until they were halfway to her desk. She shot to her feet like a new recruit suddenly snapping to attention. The contrast between the two women was extraordinary, he thought. Trudy was wearing a faded, shapeless blouse that had probably been violet when it was new, over a rumpled pair of beige slacks. Halleck was still in her metallic gold coverall, glowing like a goddess, almost a full head taller than Trudy. "Trudy," said McClintock, "I'd like you to meet Anita Halleck, head of the IAA's Space Telescope Project."
"I know who Mrs. Halleck is," said Trudy, her eyes on the woman. "I'm very happy to meet you."
Halleck nodded graciously as McClintock finished the introduction.
"And this is Dr. Trudy Yost, who has come here to work under Professor Ulrich."
Smoothly, McClintock continued, "Trudy and I are having dinner together this evening." Trudy's eyes went wide for an instant, then she said,
"If you'd like to join us, Mrs. Halleck." "Why, thank you, Trudy. I think that would be fine."
McClintock kept his face impassive, but inwardly he wondered if Trudy would be shocked at the idea of a ménage à trois. He knew from his father's boasting that Halleck wouldn't be. The cafeteria looked even dumpier than usual in McClintock's eyes. They had to sit at one of the long tables with the two women on either side of him. No decent chairs, he grumbled to himself, just these damned benches. The room was filling up, grubby-looking engineers and technicians lining up at the food and drink dispensers, crowding all the tables, talking and laughing with each other. McClintock imagined that none of them had ever seen the inside of a real restaurant. And the food selection was pitiful.
He had picked what purported to be a soy steak dinner platter. It looked like a pathetic mess on his tray. Trudy had helped herself to fish fillets and a reasonably fresh-looking salad. Halleck had gone for the shellfish special. I wonder what she brought with her for dinner, McClintock asked himself. I'll bet she brought champagne with her. Sadly, he concluded, I'll never know. As they sat shoulder to shoulder with the chatting, gobbling Farside employees, Halleck leaned slightly to speak past McClintock to Trudy.
So what are you actually doing for Jason?
Jason? Trudy asked.
Professor Ulrich.
Oh. Well, we're using the best imagery that the telescopes in Earth orbit can give us to refine the parameters of Sirius C's density and oblateness. That can tell us a lot about the planet's interior composition. We're looking for indications that there might be a planetary magnetic field, a dipole field, you know, like Earth's, and...
On and on, Trudy chattered.
With some satisfaction, McClintock saw Halleck's eyes begin to glaze over. She's no more interested in this techno-babble than I am, he realized. Accident. The blare of the speakers set into the cafeteria's stone ceiling interrupted Trudy's increasingly tedious monologue.
Emergency medical team to the main airlock, the synthesized voice demanded. Emergency medical team to the main airlock.
Half a dozen men and women scrambled from their seats at the long tables and raced out the cafeteria's door.
A medical emergency? Halleck asked, looking up at the speakers.
Several other people were heading for the door. Others were talking to each other, looking worried, fearful. Trudy shot to her feet.
Maybe they'll need some volunteers to help them.
Without another word, she started for the door also. Frowning at the interruption, McClintock said to Halleck, I'd better go see what this is all about. She stood up beside him.
Carter, you're like the man who races to get ahead of the mob because he's supposed to be their leader. But he doesn't know where they're heading.
They're heading, he said bitingly, to the main airlock. He hurried in that direction, Halleck keeping pace beside him. Plenty of others were rushing down the corridor, too. The main airlock's locker area was crowded. Most of these people are onlookers, rubberneckers, McClintock thought as he shouldered his way through them. One of the technicians, a chubby-faced redhead, growled belligerently,
Who you shoving, mister?
I'm Professor Ulrich's deputy, McClintock snapped. Get out of my way! The man stepped aside grudgingly. Trudy was kneeling beside a man on the floor, still encased in a spacesuit, although his helmet had been removed. Several others were gathered around the prostrate body, removing his boots, pressing a breathing mask over his face, clipping a monitor onto one of his bared fingers.
It's Harvey Henderson, someone beside McClintock whispered.
What happened?
How the hell should I know?
He was outside. Something went wrong.
You're a real detective, pal. Bending over the medics, McClintock demanded, Who's in charge here? Blocky, gray-haired Dr. Kapstein glanced up at him, her squarish face looking somewhere between annoyed and inquisitive.
I am.
And you are?
Ida Kapstein, resident physician. Who the hell are you?
Carter McClintock. I'm Professor Ulrich's number two.
Since when?
Dr. Kapstein asked as she returned her attention to the injured man on the floor. Others of the medical team were tugging off his spacesuit trousers now. For the past 3 weeks, McClintock replied, with iron in his voice. Inwardly, he realized that he hadn't made much of an effort to make himself known to Farside's rank and file. With more than 100 people in the facility, he told himself, I can't be expected to keep track of everyone's name. He saw that the man's right foot was bloody. Another spacesuited figure came through the airlock hatch. As she lifted off her helmet, Dr. Kapstein asked her,
What happened out there, Josie? We were taking apart the mirror frame,
the young woman said, her olive-skinned face taut, her dark eyes wide with anxiety, focused on the unconscious man.
And? The doctor prompted. We were breaking it down into segments for shipment to Cellini.
What the hell happened to him? Kapstein snarled.
He tried to carry one of the segments to the tractor all by himself, the young woman said, her words tumbling out almost breathlessly. I told him to wait and let one of the robots do it, but he toted it by himself and it slipped out of his gloves and banged his foot.
The doctor puffed out a weary sigh. Dumb son of a bitch should have known better. Just because things only weigh one